Morning. I'm on today's daf in Yevamos is daf Lamed Gimel. We find ourselves back on Lamed Aleph Amid Beis, and we are right up to the point where we're going to be discussing the necessity and the need to document and to date a get. That says Mam Get. It's a big sugya. It's actually a big sugya in Gittin, but we're going to be discussing it tangentially now. We took a little break from Yevamos. It's not so much a break from Yevamos as it is a discussion in the Gemara regarding what happens if you have Suffolk Kedushin, Suffolk Gerushin, and with any one of the Arias that are mentioned in the first Mishnah of the Masechta, and then a co-wife is taken on, and so how do we react, how do we treat the, not so much the Suffolk, I mean the Suffolk's a Suffolk, but how do we treat the Sarah, the co-wife of the Suffolk Erva? So Shimutu, Shiasa, we worked with Chazakas. Okay, a lot of good discussion that took place in the Gemara. Now the big discussion that took place in the Gemara over the course of yesterday, over the course of Daf Lamed Aleph, had to do with the fact that the Mishnah seems to be conspicuous in the fact that when describing what a Suffolk Kedushin is, so the Mishnah gives a very simple scenario on where there's eight Amos apart from one another, and Rishus Rabbim, he throws it to her, and it falls somewhere between him and her, and different reports exactly where it fell. Okay, so good. So in other words, a real Suffolk, a Suffolk in Metzias. And then when it comes to Gerushin, the Mishnah gave a whole bunch of other examples. There was no date in the document. The document wasn't signed by witnesses. It was only handwritten. It was signed, but only by one witness. A whole series of scenarios where the get is not great. It's okay. It's maybe halachically acceptable, but rabbinically disapproved. But in other words, what the Mishnah did not do by Gerushin is give a very simple scenario, the same one that it gave by Kedushin. And why didn't the Mishnah do that? Okay, so we had, for the bulk of yesterday's daf, we had Rabba's response, which is that the Mishnah did that on purpose. The Mishnah did that deliberately, and for reasons which he explained. But then the Gemara brought down the opinion of Abaye and the opinion of Rabba, which is, no, that's not correct. When the Mishnah brought down the case of Kiddushin, the Hua did the same thing would be true by Gerushin as well. That by Gerushin, if there was a get and it was thrown halfway between him and her, that also creates a suffix as well, just as it would by Kiddushin. Okay, so then the Gemara was bothered by the language of the Mishnah. So the Mishnah says Zehu. How come the Mishnah said Zehu? You know, every time the Mishnah uses a term like Zehu, right? Zarak. Right, I'm just reviewing the Mishnah. Zarak la kedushin suffik karavla suffik karavla zehu suffik kedushin. This is suffik kedushin. What do you mean? This is suffik kedushin. What isn't? Clearly, the Mishnah is trying to tell us that this is as opposed to something else. And the same thing when it comes to gerushin. Zehu suffik gerushin. This is gerushin. This is not something else. So, ask the Gemara. What did the Mishnah mean by that? So that's what we're up to now in the Gemara. We're going to pick it up right at this point in time. We're in Lamed Aleph Amud Beis. So the Gemara says there's no zman by kedushin, as we explained yesterday. When a man is aris a woman, when he betroths a woman, so he does so in one of three ways: keser, ishtar, kesef, and bia. So when you write a shtar, so you write a document. So one could make an argument that when you write a document, so you date it like you date any other document. And when it comes to a get, you must date the document. We'll see in just a moment. If you don't date a document by a get, it gets no good. So the Gemara explains. How come this is not true by Kedushin? So, Mimneim alo tikna zman by Kedushin. So the Gemara says there's no zman instituted by Kedushin. Meaning when you write your Kedushin star, so there's no requirement to write zman. I mean, you can, but there's no requirement in doing so. And the Gemara wants to know, why not? So, Hani chalaman dami mishum basa choso litkin zman mishum deika de mekash bekas. I'm sorry, litkin zman. So the Gemara says, did I skip? Yeah, I did. Yeah. Okay, thank you. Hanich laman dami mishum perei, arusul leslei perei. So the Gemara says, look, I understand the need, I can understand the waiving of writing a date on a shtar kedushin if we understand why it is that there is a requirement to date a get. So let me first back up, give a little bit of background. Let's go over the Gemara and get in outside, and then we'll go back to our Gemara over here. Why does the get need to be documented? So the Gemara over there in Gittin, Daf Yud Zayin, gives one of two reasons. Number one, the reason why a get needs to be documented is because of Peros. Peros, we know that when a woman and a man go into a marriage, so her properties are still her properties, but the husband is entitled to Peros. Any of the produce that comes off the property, well, you know, the profit, right, in a more modern scenario, if there was, if, let's say she had stocks, so he could take the dividends. Okay, so, but in the good old days where she came in with property, so he's allowed to eat the peiros. Okay, that's part of the ishtar ksuva. That's part of the ksuva contract between husband and wife. And Rashi over here points out, you could take a look at Rashi right here, I've just stayed outside, so Rashi over here writes, and there's a lot of exchanges that are done, a lot of contractual exchanges that are done between husband and wife, so peiros is one of them, and in exchange for him getting her peiros, so he has now required, he's obligated to ransom her. If she is captured, if she's taken into captivity, and they're demanding a ransom, so the husband is contractually obligated to pay it. I would like to think that he'd want to pay it, but if right now we're putting emotion out of the equation, we're just talking about his contractual obligation. He is obligated to do so. Okay, so that's and the Gemara Ksuvas points out. I mean, well, obviously we'll get there later on in Seder Nashim. The Gemara Ksuvas points out there are other contractual obligations between a husband and wife. This is just being one of them. Now you have to date a document because at the point of the termination of the marriage, obviously he's no longer entitled to peiros. So. If he starts eating peiros after the get was delivered, so she's going to have a claim against him, but if there's no date on the document, so she's not going to have much of a claim. So the document needs to be dated so that when she goes after him for a reimbursement of peiros that she feels that he ate illegally, so obviously the strength of her argument will come based on the date of the document. That's what's called peiros. So the Gemara says, if that's true, I totally understand why it's not on a Shtar Kiddushin. Because it's not at the point of Kiddushin that the husband's entitled to Paris. A husband is only entitled to Paris at the point of Nisuin, not at the point of Kiddushin. They're married at the point of Kiddushin, but all contractual obligations begin at Nisuin. So the Gemara says, and I totally understand why we waived the dating requirement of Ishtar Kiddushin. But then the Gemara goes on. But there's another reason why a document needs to be dated, a get needs to be dated, and that's because of Basa Choso. Let's say a man marries his niece. Now, the scenario over here doesn't have to be that he married his niece, but the Gemara is just using this as the example because most likely her uncle is going to have a significant amount of rachmanis for his niece. Now, he marries his niece, so she's his niece and she's his wife. And as we've seen time and again, that's perfectly legitimate. A man's allowed to marry his niece. She's not an erva. And because she's not only his wife, but she's also family, he will have exceptional rachmanis for her in the event that she's mizana, she commits adultery. So if there are witnesses and there was a warning and there was due process and so forth and so on, and she's looking now at the death penalty, so what their husband would do, now again, this would be very altruistic of the husband, and that's why the Gemara illustrates this in the example of his niece, just so that we can understand why the husband will be this altruistic. So you know what he'll do? He'll divorce her, and he'll just hand her a bill of divorce, and then she'll go to base, and she'll say, look, right, what I did obviously was very inappropriate, but I was actually divorced, and she'll give the get over to the base to show that she was divorced. If there's no date, so Beis Din now will not know what to do. Beis Din can't do anything because she has a document that says she's divorced.
It's not valid.
Huh?
But it's not valid.
So therefore, right, so that's the end of the story. So therefore the Chachamim required a dated shtar, and if now that they have a requirement of a dated shtar, so the shtar is only going to be good if it has a date on it. And if it does not have a date on it, it's just simply not going to be considered a valid shtar. Okay. That's the reason of Basa Choso. So the Gemara says, now if that's true at the back end of marriage, so the Gemara says, shouldn't that be true also on the front end of marriage as well? Litkin's man mishum de'ika de mekash bek. I'm sorry, litkin's man. So the Gemara says, so if that's true, so let's institute zman also for kedushin as well, because again, at the point of kedushin, she now becomes eishes ish, with all the liability of committing adultery if she commits adultery at that point in time. So much like we want to establish when she got divorced, so that Beis Din will know how to adjudicate. So why don't we do the same thing at the front end of marriage by Kiddushin? So the Gemara says, so now I don't understand. Why doesn't the Shtar Kiddushin require a date? So the Gemara answers, Mishum de'ikad de'mekash be'kas be'ikad de'mekash be'ishtar lo takum rabbanan zman. So the Gemara says, well, you know, when it comes to getting into a marriage, there are three ways to do so. And Shtar is just but only one way. So you could just also get into a marriage through Kesef, which obviously has no date to it. There's no date on the money. You don't date the money. So Amalei Rav Acha Bar Rav Yosef Rav Ashi V'Ha'avda De'ika De'kanim B'Kas V'Ika B'Shtar. So the Gemara says, yeah, but I don't understand. When it comes to an Eved and the purchasing of an Eved, So you can purchase with kesef, you can purchase with a shtar, v'takan rabbanan zman. And meanwhile, when it comes to the purchasing of an eved, so the rabbis instituted zman when you write a document. So the Gemara says, look, I understand that there's more than one way to get into a marriage, but there's also more than one way in terms of purchasing an eved. And meanwhile, or selling an eved. And meanwhile, if and when it's done with a document, it has to be dated. So the Gemara says, Ruba b'shtar, hacha ruba b'kaspa. So the Gemara says, okay, you're right, but we're going to go with statistics. Statistically speaking, when a man enters into a marriage, most people do it with money. And so therefore, for the minority of time that's done with a document, the rabbis didn't institute dating a document. However, when it comes to an eved, the selling of an eved, the buying of an eved, most of the time it's done with a document. Therefore, the rabbis instituted dating the document. Answer number one. Answer number two. Ibai sema mishum delo afshar. So the Gemara says also when it comes to the dating of a document of erusin lo afshar. What's the options? Hechli aved lincha gabi didal. So what are we going to do? Write up a shtar kiddushin and leave it by her. So machkalei. So the Gemara says, well, if in the event she is going to want to commit adultery and she has a shtar kiddushin in her possession, so she'll do is she'll erase the date. And linche gabi d-day, so let's put it by him. So zimnin debasar chosi yimachap alav. The Gemara says, well, that's not going to help because, again, if we're talking about a case where he married his niece, so he's going to have extra special consideration and compassion for his wife, who's also his niece. And so therefore, what he'll do is he'll also either not procure the document or erase the date. So linche gabi edim. So the Gemara says, so now what? So leave it by the witnesses. He does chir leis elisod. So the Gemara says, leave it by the Edom. Look, if the Edom remember what date it was that they got married, so the Edom are going to testify to the date. Ve'ilo, and the Gemara says, and let's say the witnesses don't remember. Now what? So the Gemara says, zim dechazim miksava. So then they're going to have to look at the actual document. So you know what they're doing? They're not testifying. They're reading a piece of paper. And reading a piece of paper is not testimony. And meanwhile, when it comes to testimony has to be just that. It has to be testimony. For someone to just read a document, that's not considered testimony. There's a big discussion off the daf, which is that based on this Gemara over here, how does the document ever work? Meaning, if what we want in order to provide evidence that something happened, so the Gemara says that in order to establish anything, you need testimony. And not mipik savam. And don't read off a piece of paper. Well, if you're not allowed to read off a piece of paper, so how does any shtar work?
Isn't that a written testimony?
Right. Well, and right. And isn't that written testimony? And what's the difference between written testimony and aiding reading off a piece of paper? And, by the way, aiding reading off a piece of paper that they themselves signed. Okay, so it's a big discussion. It's off the daf. It's really important, but we're going to go on. We're behind, obviously. So the Ihachi Beger Shinami. So the Gemara says, okay, so why not write a date by Shtar Kiddushin? The answer is, there's no logistic way in doing so. Can't leave the document by her. Can't leave the document by him. Can't leave the document by the Eidim. Okay, him and her, they're going to end up forging the document, erasing the document, leaving it by the witnesses. Legally has no significance. If they don't remember the date, they can't read off the piece of paper. It's not going to help. So the Gemara says, logistically, there's no way to do it. So the Gemara says, oh, that's interesting. So if there's no logistic way to date a shtar erusin, so why don't you provide the same argument for getting? The Gemara's next question. Ihachi begirshin nami, nemahachi, hasam lahasala dide ka'asi, hache lechova dide ka'asi. So the Gemara says, no, there's a big difference. Because when it comes to the Shtar Kiddushin, the only thing that it's going to do is it's going to save her. But when it comes to, when it comes to the get, the only thing the get can do is can only save her. Meaning, what's her chazaka? Her chazaka is she's married. And now the only thing that's going to save her is the get. So there, since that's the only mechanism that's going to save her, so therefore institute the writing of a date on a Shtar Gerushin. So that in the event that she does commit adultery, that get, once dated and once required to be dated, can no longer save her. But when it comes to Kiddushin, it just does the opposite. Meaning, what's her chazaka prior to Kiddushin? She's penuya. She's a single woman. And the Kiddushin puts her in the state of Eishes Ish, So the Gemara says so. It's only going to create a chova, not a zechus.
But you know, 7 years. If he's for kiddushin, then he's going to if his kid's kidnapped, he's going to be obligated to save her by kiddushin.
No, the Gemara says that when it comes to all the kesuva contractual obligations, it does not start at the point of kiddushin. That starts at the point of nisuin. Okay, so fine. So that's okay. The Gemara says fine. The kiddushin, the gerushin are at two opposite sides of what the chazaka would have said. Good. All right. So we are done with the sugya of safek, and now we go back into the world of yevamos. The Mishnah here describes Gemachim Nisun Negimel Achrius. We have now three and three. Three brothers are married to three women. These three women are unrelated. Okay. Umeisechad Mehem. The Asaba Sheni Maimer. All this should sound familiar. We did this Mishnah earlier in the Masechta. Twice earlier in the Masechta. And the Asaba Sheni Maimer. And one of the brothers now does Maimer to the widow. Umeis. And he dies. Are Elu Chotos Velomis Yabmos. So, what's the what does the third surviving brother do now? What does he do? Yeah. So he does chalitza, and that's it. And he has to do chalitza to both. And the Gemara quotes a drasha, and we've said this already a number of times. Let's say it again. This is not a bona fide drasha. Meaning the drasha is that a woman that requires yibam is only a woman that carries with her one zika, but not a woman that carries two zikas. As we pointed out already a number of times, but let's say it again, because the more we hear it, the more we're going to get it. This woman over here doesn't really have two zikas. That's not true. Maimer, we're operating with Beis Hillel, not with Beis Shammai. A maimer does not create a kinyan. A maimer is rabbinic legislation, and it does not create a kinyan gamur. So really, when the second brother did maimer to the first widow, so he didn't really take her as a wife. She's still bound. She still has a zika from her first husband. And if and when Shimon dies after the point of Maimer, so really these are, on a Torah level, two women coming from two batim. And so therefore, what the last surviving husband could really do is, he could really do yibam to both women. But out of deference to Maimer, which creates a perception that now Shimon married this woman, so therefore we treat it as if she has now with her two zikas. And the fact that the Mishnah quotes a pasuk and darshan's a pasuk, it's an asmachta. All right, we made that point already a number of times. Rabbi Shimon Omer miyaben lezer sheyirtzeh v'cholei tzlishniyah. And Rabbi Shimon says, no. Maimer is all or nothing. Rabbi Shimon has a very interesting understanding of Maimer. He either totally sides with Beis Shammai, or he totally doesn't, or he goes totally the other direction. But in other words, Maimer is all or nothing. It either creates a kinyan gamur, or it does absolutely nothing. That's Rabbi Shimon's suffix regarding Maimer. And so therefore, according to Rabbi Shimon, based on that, so miyabim lezi shirtzeh v'cholei tzlishniyah. So now he could do yibim to either one. Because, as the classic expression goes, mima nafshach. It doesn't matter which one he does yibim to. Because let's consider the possibilities. If Maimer created kinyan gamur, so what did that mean? That means now she is Shimon's wife. When Shimon dies, she is Shimon's widow. Shimon now is leaving two wives. Obviously, the mitzvah of yibam requires only the marriage of one of the two. But obviously, he can choose. Let's say Maimer did nothing. If Maimer did nothing, so this woman now was Reuven's wife and still is Reuven's wife and Reuven's widow. So therefore, these are two women coming from two different houses. So therefore, he could be miyabim now, Shimon's widow or Reuven's widow. And quite frankly, he could do both. And he's required to do both. But because Rabbi Shimon is unclear as to what Maimer does, so therefore, he'll do yibam to one and chalitza to the other, and that'll cover all bases. He'll do yibam to one, whoever widow it was either Reuven's widow or Shimon's widow, and he'll do chalitza to the other. Because if Maimer did nothing, so then he needs to do chalitza to the other. And if Maimer created kinyan gamur, so that means that this is Shimon's other wife, but he already did yibam to one. What's this chalitza going to represent? Nothing. But again, just to cover all the bases, so we'll do yibam to one and chalitza to the other.
Is this considered an inferior chalitza?
In this particular scenario, it's the only one left. So it may be, but but there's nothing else to do. Now, the Ezekiel, we're running right into the Gemara. Ezekiel's basically in the Reisa chalitza nami lo tibaye. So the Gemara says, thinking right now that the Mishnah is operating on a Daraisa level. So if really there are two Zikas, So there shouldn't be a chalitza requirement. So the Gemara says, and really this is a din derabanan. And really it's a gzera. Because like I said back in the Mishnah, but the Gemara just spells it out. One might look at Maimer and say, hey, Shimon married her. And what's happening? And now the last surviving brother is doing Yibam to both? Oh, it must be that Yibam can be done to more than one wife. That would be the perception that would be created. So so the Gemara says, okay, I hear you, but why don't you do the following? Why don't you have the last surviving brother, Levi, do Yibam to one of the wives and do Chalitza to the other? So the Gemara says, So the Gemara says, but that's going to give another erroneous impression where somebody's going to look at that and say, wow, interesting. Right? I saw Shimon do Mimer to this woman. So I'm thinking now that she's Shimon's wife. And then when Shimon dies, he's leaving now two widows. And I guess that's what the Torah wants. The Torah wants you to be Miyabim, one of the widows, and do chalitza to the other widow. Right? I guess that's what the Torah wants, and that's absolutely not true. In other words, in the world of Yibam, like we said all the way back on Daf Yud and Daf Yud Aleph, it's one brother representing the brothers, it's one woman representing the widows, and that's it. So the Gemara says, V'yamru idi miyabim v'hadar chalitz, I'm sorry, mesasa chalitz, V'yamru idi miyabim v'hadar chalitz hachanami.
So,
V'yamru, thank you. V'yamru, and the Gemara says, and okay, idem yabim v'hader chalitz achanami. So the Gemara says, you're right. If the order was Yibam followed by chalitza, so you're right. No harm, no foul. Because Yibam was done, the mitzvah was accomplished. What's chalitza then in that scenario? A weird shoe ceremony. But it has no legal significance. The Gemara says, and that's not bad. But what would happen, however, Alexera Dilma chalitz bereisha, the problem is that let's say he goes in with the strategy of Yibam and Chalitza, but for whatever reason, the orders get reversed. He first does Chalitza to one of the widows, and then he does Yibam to the other widow, to which the Gemara says, now that's a big problem. Once you do Chalitza to one of the widows, that's it. The story is over. The story of Yibam now is over. He cannot do Yibam to the other widow. And if he does, he's being pogea.
Because of Zika?
Huh? The Zika's broken. There's no mitzvah anymore. So now when he does the mitzvah of Yibam to the other widow, that's not the mitzvah of Yibam. And she's Eishes Ach. And no good. So, okay. So, Shuv Lo Yibana. Amar Avanasen Get Lamam Aro. Okay, let's pause over here for just a moment. Good. So the Gemara now explaining the Tanakama of the Mishnah. Again, when a man does Maimer to his brother's widow, Minatora, it doesn't do anything. Again, the assumption is we're going like Beis Hillel. And so now, if Shimon dies after having done Maimer to Reuven's widow, and Shimon now is leaving two widows, so what's the halacha? The halacha is chalitza needs to be done to both. Why not do Yibam? So the Gemara answers, we don't do Yibam because of Gzeira. And the Gzeira is, as the Gemara just concluded, that he'll do Yibam and Chalitza, but then he may reverse the order and he'll do Chalitza then Yibam. And once you do Chalitza, so that's it. The story is over, and therefore there's no longer a mitzvah of Yibam, assuming they come mi baisachad. Okay. Amarava. Nasan get lama amaro. Okay, now, the Gemara is just going to have a very quick discussion, although a lot of time can be spent on these next lines of the Gemara. We're not going to spend a lot of time on them. But Mimer is done. Now again, Mimer is a rabbinic legislation where Yibam is going to look a little bit more like marriage. In marriage, there are two stages to marriage. In Yibam, in HaTorah, there's only one stage, and that is Bia. And so the Chachamim put a little more process into the mitzvah of Yibam, and that's Mimer. Okay. A man does Mimer to one of his co-wives. And now what he wants to do is he wants to take it back. How do you take back Mimer? So that's what the Gemara is now going to be discussing for these next couple of lines. So Rava, there's two statements, both made by Rava, two different versions of how he said it. So version number one, I'm a Rava, nothing get lama amaro. Hutra tsarasa, aval hi asura. So if you give a get to your ma'amaro, man does mimer to one of the widows, and then he says, you know what, I want to undo it, so he gives a get. To undo the mimer. So interestingly enough, Okay. But when we say okay, what's okay? The co-wife now becomes eligible. Meaning once Maimer is done with one of the widows, that identifies that particular widow as being the one that Yibum is going to be done to. So what he can do is he can somewhat undo the Maimer by giving her a get. And what the get does is, in a limited fashion, undoes the Maimer. Not to her per se, but now the other widows become eligible. No, in other words, no. Well, no, in other words, once the other widows now become eligible, so then he or one of the other brothers will do Yibum or Chalitza to the other widow. Okay, that's how you can partially undo. Aval hi asura, demichlofa babalas get. And she herself is going to be prohibited, but not for a fundamental reason. Meaning really fundamentally the get undid the maimer. But the problem is that you gave a get to a woman, and you're going to think now that under all circumstances when a woman received a get, she now becomes eligible. And in the world of Yibum, that's not normally true. Normally, if a man hands a get to one of the Yavamas, that's it. The story's not over, because again, you have to now do Chalitza, but the get disqualifies her. So over here, the get is not disqualifying her. The get is just undoing the mimer. But again, from the perception of other people, people will easily confuse this case and the case where he hands her a get. Igad Amri, the Gemara gives another version. And in the second version of Rava, the get totally undoes the mimer. Meaning the mimer is revocable, and the way you revoke it is by giving her a get. As to my taima, my da'avidba, shaklai. Because what he did, he undid. So in other words, interesting. The institution, I mean, really interesting. The institution of Mimer, the rabbinic institution of Mimer, can be undone in the world of Yibum through a get. So again, it goes back to what we discussed already a number of times. Mimer is patterned more after is it a Yibum halacha or is it a Nisuin halacha? The Gemara asks this question in different versions over the course of the Masechta, and basically that's what's going on right here. Meaning that if we're treating it strictly as a Nisuin halacha, to give it more of a flavor of marriage, so therefore Mimer can be totally undone with a get, going now back to the original position of you could do Yibum, another brother could do Yibum to her. Okay. And by the way, just as another interesting aside, remember we had a discussion not that long ago in the Daf regarding eligibility, ineligibility, and eligibility. What interesting. Over here, that's basically what we're looking at. A woman was eligible. She becomes ineligible through a mimer, but ineligible is a funny word, meaning ineligible to all the other brothers, and then she becomes eligible. So it's not exactly the same like we discussed earlier, but it's a version of that. Okay. Next Mishnah. And this Mishnah will take us through the rest of today. Meaning, we're starting now the Mishnah on Lamed Beis Amud Aleph. And today's daf is daf Lamed Gimel. Hopefully we're going to make up some ground over the course of today. But here we go. It's such a simple Mishnah. And it's going to engender such a basic discussion. So let's see the Mishnah inside. Shnei Achim Nisun Shtei Achayos. At this point in time, we've been talking about cases of 4 and 2, 3 and 2. Brothers, sisters, 2 brothers, 2 sisters, 4 brothers, two of them marrying 2 sisters, and now, nice and easy, a Mishnah that describes 2 brothers marrying 2 sisters. Okay. Shnei achim nisun shtei achayos ameisecha mehem. Okay, and one of the brothers dies. Good. Simple construct of Yibum. But the problem is, v'achakach meisa ishto, not the problem. But the variable now over here is as follows. Well, let's stop first at the death of the brother, at the first brother. The only brother in this case is going to die. If 2 brothers are married to 2 sisters, let's say Reuven and Shimon, and we're going to bump off Reuven. So now to Shimon, Reuven's widow is one of 2 things. She's Reuven's wife, or now widow, but again, once an erva, always an erva, and she's also his wife, Shimon's wife's sister. So she now represents to him 2 Isurim in the Torah, Eshes Ach and Achos Ishto. Now, as we already learned from day 1 of the Masechta, what does that mean? It means now that there's going to be a petur from the mitzvah of Yibum. And when we say petur, we actually mean much more than that. There's an iser. He can't marry her because she now is not only the iser of Eishes Ach, but she's also the iser of Achos Ishto. Good. The basics, ABCs of the mitzvah of Yibum. It takes us all the way back to day 1. But now let's describe and discuss the following scenario. What if that after Reuven dies, Shimon's wife dies? So now this woman to him is only, she's no longer Achos Ishto, because unfortunately his wife died. Now to him she's only Eshet Ach. Eshet Ach, the mitzvah of Yibum, lifts the Isser of Eshet Ach. The Mishnah says, Achakach Mesa Ishto, Shosheni, Hareze Asura Alav Alam Isol, Venesra Alav Sha'achas. This idea we've seen before, we're going to now see it again, and that is, since at the time of candidacy, when she became a candidate for Yibum, she was Usher at that point in time, she will always be Usher, even if the reason of her ineligibility is no longer there. Good. This is an idea that we've already touted a number of times in the Masechta, to which the Gemara's reaction to the Mishnah is Pshita, meaning at this point in time it's obvious. And the Gemara is bothered by a very simple question. I mean, simple. Like any of this is simple at this point in time. But go back to the Mishnah and Daf Lamed. And you remember the Mishnah and Daf Lamed? You had three brothers. You had all three of them married. Two of the brothers are married to two sisters. And what happened over there is that in one of the scenarios, at the point of candidacy, she was ineligible, but only ineligible to one of the brothers, not both of the brothers. And yet, what do we say in that Mishnah? Since she was ineligible at the time of candidacy, even though it was not a full ineligibility, because she was only ineligible to one of the surviving brothers, but not to the other one, yet the Mishnah over there said, once ineligible, always ineligible. So the Gemara says, once you know the Mishnah and Daf Lamed, our Mishnah now becomes totally superfluous. So the Gemara says, right. You're right. So the Gemara says, Tana ha Tana Bereisha. So the Gemara says, well, you know what? Let's give you a little history of Mishnayos. The first Mishnah that was taught was our Mishnah over here. Plain and simple. And the reason why our Mishnah is so plain and simple is because it describes a scenario where at the point of Nefila, at the point of candidacy, she was totally disqualified from the remainder of the family. Now, the remainder of the family in our Mishnah only represents one surviving brother. But fine. She became totally disqualified. But what we originally thought, what the Chacham originally thought is, if she didn't become totally disqualified from the family, meaning if there were two surviving brothers, and she only was disqualified to one and not the other, so they thought, okay, that's okay. Meaning if at a later point in time, the reason for ineligibility is no longer there, she can become mutter to both of the brothers. That's what they thought originally. Visharya. And they originally thought that the Mishnah and Daf Lamed was actually mutter, not aser. Hadar chazili surah. But then, upon further review, they came to the conclusion that no, even in that Mishnah, she's going to be aser, even though she didn't become ineligible to the entire family, to all the surviving brothers. And va'aydi dechaviv alei akadma u'mishnah lozazamim kama. Now, it's true the Mishnah and Daf Lamed is a bigger chiddush. And it's true, after knowing the Mishnah and Daf Lamed, you don't need our Mishnah and Daf Lamed base. All that's true. But Mishnah lozazamim kama, but we have a general rule, which once we have a Mishnah, we don't expunge a Mishnah, even if it's no longer necessary. Okay, it's a basic rule about Mishnayos. Mishnah lozazamim kama. Okay, Tana Rabbanan. Okay, we take a breath now as we enter into an unbelievable sugya. It's really so to stick. It's a fundamental sugya, and it touches on the question of Ein Isser Chalal Issa. Just a quick introduction, and we'll start inside. Okay, we go through the Gemara Makos. You're going to see this a number of times. Where in the Gemara Makos we talk about how if you eat like a bug, right, you're going to be violating not one, not two, not three, sometimes four, sometimes five lavim in the Torah. Okay. But that's simply because there's numerous psukim that represent the prohibition of eating a bug. Fine. However, our discussion over here is going to revolve around the following scenario. There are also a number of times in the Torah where the Torah prohibits something to you based on one isser, and then because of a new facet or a new variable, the same item is going to become usher to you again. And the question on the table is a very simple one. Will that happen? Meaning, if the Torah already prohibits me from eating an item is a simple scenario, All right, a simple construct. The Torah already prohibits me from eating it. Let's say, I'll give a simple example. Let's say nevela. It's not kosher food. It's not kosher meat. Didn't receive a proper shechita. Torah prohibits me from eating it. And now what do? I cook it up with some milk. Okay? Does the iser of basar b'chalav now take effect, considering the fact that it's already asur to me? This touches on the basic question of whether or not one iser is chal on top of another iser. That's the easy version of the whole discussion, and now it's going to get a little trickier. Tana rabbanan ba'ala chayav avah mishamei shesach mishamachos isha. Divrei Rabbi Yossi. So first we introduce ourselves to the opinion of Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi says that in our scenario of Reuben and Shimon marrying two sisters, Reuben and Shimon being brothers, are married to two sisters, and Shimon has relations with his sister-in-law. Now it's his sister-in-law twice over. Number one, it's his brother's wife. Number two, it's his wife's sister. So it's his sister-in-laws. Right. It's same woman, but two sister-in-laws.
Reuben died. She's not an
And, all right, right. Let's Rashi says no. Rashi says bechai ishto. Okay, I'm sorry. Right, no, you're right. Eishes would introduce a third ister. Yeah, good. Good. You're right. So ba'ala chayav ala mishum eishesach mishum achos isha. So good. So according to Rav Yossi, those are two isurim. Now, when we say two isurim, let's break this down even just a little bit further. Meaning, when we're talking about crime and punishment, if it's done b'mezid, if it's done intentionally, and there are witnesses, and they warned you, and you go through the whole due process, you know, first of all, for achos ishto and eshes ach, those are not capital punishments. Interesting, but it's true. They're not capital crimes, they're not capital punishments. So in terms of receiving a death penalty, in this particular case, you're not going to receive a death penalty. There are other arayas where there is a death penalty, as we'll discuss later on this morning.
But it's your offspring of the mamzer.
But yes, that's also true. But that would have been true if it would have been one iser, right? So here, in terms of practical application, what difference does it make? The answer is, if done b'shogig, if done inadvertently, so then he'd have to bring two carbon chatzis. Or we could also talk in terms of malchus, meaning receiving lashes. It's a law in the Torah. It's a negative prohibition in the Torah. And if received a warning, so the accepted halacha is that they're going to receive lashes. So in this particular scenario, two sets of lashes. Okay, that's the opinion of Rabbi Yossi. And Rabbi Shimon Omer, Einu chayav ala mishum eshesach bovad. And Rabbi Shimon says, no, you only chayav for eshesach. Now, before, let's just go on in the Gemara, because we're going to clarify Rabbi Shimon's position. Now, there's another brisa that says, according to Rabbi Shimon, you're chayav eshes achos isha. So lo kasha kasha nasa chai v'achar kach nasa meis kasha nasa meis v'achar kach nasa chai. Rabbi Shimon, I'm sorry. Let's pause over there. Let's explain. So the Gemara says it's very simple. Meaning, Rabbi Shimon doesn't favor one Isra over the other. It's just whatever Isra got the first. So if Reuben and Shimon are brothers married to two sisters, so let's say, and Reuben's the one who's going to die. So let's say if Reuben marries his wife first, so that woman to Shimon is Eshesach. Now the fact that Shimon married this woman's sister, okay, but Eshesach got here first. So the Isra of Eshesach is there first. So good. That's the only Isra that's going to be Chal. If we, let's say, Shimon first marries his wife, this woman now to Shimon is Achos Ishto. The fact now that Reuben marries the woman, introducing also Eshesach, so to which the Gemara says, okay, but that came in second. And Rabbi Shimon holds Ein Isser Chal Al Isser. Once the Torah prohibits something for you, the other Isser is not Chal. It does not apply. The Gemara asks a wonderful question. Rabbi Shimon, Heichad Nasa Meis V'Achachach Nasa Chai, came in this Achos Ishto Lo Chayal Tisyabeim Yevume. So what a powerful question. According to Rabbi Shimon, who subscribes to this viewpoint of Ein Isser Chal Al Isser. So the Gemara says, so I wonder now. So let's say Reuben marries a woman first. So that woman now to Shimon is Eshesach. And now Shimon marries the sister of this woman. So now she's Achos Ishto, but according to Rabbi Shimon, Ein Isser Chal Al Isser. And so now the Gemara wonders, so why not do Yibum? Meaning, what was the reason you can't do Yibum? Oh, because she's an Erva. According to Rabbi Shimon, no, she's not. Meaning, yes, of course, she's Eshesach, but the Torah allows Eshesach. That's the whole mitzvah of Yibum, is to override Eshesach. And the fact now that she's a chos ishto, according to Rabbi Shimon, she's not a chos ishto because ein iser chal al iser. If Reuven married this woman first and then Shimon married the sister second, the iser of a chos ishto is not chal.
That could apply to any of the cases.
Absolutely correct. The Gemara's question over here is extraordinarily powerful. Good. Amar Rav Ashi, iser achos isha mitle tale vekai. Ipakos iser eshes ach, asi iser achos isha vechayel, vehilkach lo paka. So the Gemara says, get in line. Okay, now I'm giving imagery. It's good imagery. It'll help us see it. Meaning what, according to Rabbi Shimon, it's not that the iser just simply goes away. It doesn't go away. It's just suspended. It's waiting there. It's second in line. Meaning right now, this woman to Shimon is first and foremost Eshesach. Currently not Achos Ishto. But it's not that the Isser went anywhere. It's waiting in line. It's that Isser is in line behind Eshesach. And if for whatever event, let's say Yibum, the Isser of Eshesach were to go away, so Achos Ishto would be right there and take effect. And it's an interesting Rashi, and I strongly encourage you to read the Rashi. Read it a number of times. It's super interesting. And Rashi says, because Achos Ishto is behind Eshesach in terms of Isurim, so therefore the Isur of Eshesach doesn't get lifted. Okay. You could have made the argument that, no, Eshesach gets lifted, and then Achos Ishto applies. But Rashi says, because the second is behind the first, so therefore the first never gets lifted. And the truth of the matter is, don't fault Rashi for saying that. That's basically what the Gemara just said. Okay, anyway. Good. So what we have done now is we have explained the opinion of Rabbi Shimon of Ein Iser Chal Iser. Now we go back to Rabbi Yossi. And really for the duration of today, we are going to focus on the Shita of Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi seems to disagree, right? Rabbi Yossi says that if Shimon has relations with that woman, he's Chayef two times over. One for Eshesach and one for Achos Ishto. And presumably it's because he holds that an Iser is Chal al Iser. And the Gemara would like to explore this position of Rabbi Yossi. The Gemara says, "What consider the following brisa? A man does an aver that has two misos, two capital punishments. Rashi gives a simple example. Let's say the man sleeps with his mother-in-law. Man sleeping with his mother-in-law, so that is a capital crime. Okay, why some arayas are not capital crimes and some are? Okay, I don't have a good way to explain it, but it's a capital crime." And so now, what if, not only is she your mother-in-law, but she's also married? Now, one would like to think that one's mother-in-law was married at the time when your wife was produced, but, okay, doesn't, in other words, in the as we're about to explore, she could be just chamoso, and then at a later point in time, she can become ishatish, which will...
So your husband is alive.
Right, okay, it could easily happen. So now... So she's two. So let's say she is both your mother-in-law and she's also a married woman. That's two Isurim in the Torah. And not only two Isurim, but two capital punishments in the Torah. Now, for having relations with one mother-in-law, what's the punishment? Sreifa. For having relations with a married woman, what's the punishment? Chenek. What do we know? The Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us, Sreifa is above Chenek. In terms of severity, in terms of rishus, Sreifa is above Chenek. Which capital punishment does he receive? So, the Tanakhama of this brisa says, Nidom Bechamura. He gets Sreifa. And Rabbi Yossi, Omer Nidom Bezika, Rishon Haba Alav. And Rabbi Yossi says, whichever came first. In other words, if first she was your mother-in-law, right? Widowed, divorced, maybe the child was produced out of wedlock, whatever the case is. If she was first your mother-in-law, and then afterwards she is married, so that means that the Isra Chamosa came before the Isra of Eshesish. If she was married and then becomes your mother-in-law, so then the Isser of Eshesish precedes the Isser of Achos Ishto. And so therefore the punishment that you're going to receive is just simply whichever got there first.
But at the time of the sin, she's both.
Not necessarily. I'm sorry, in this case, you're right. But so what? In other words, she's both, but according to Rabbi Yossi, whichever one came first. And now the question is staring us right in the face. Didn't Rabbi Yossi just 10 lines ago in the Gemara say, Isser Chalal Isser? So Danny, that's basically what the Gemara was bothered by right now. So I don't understand. How can Rav Yossi say that you only, you look at the one that came first?
But because you can't do both.
Well, that's an excellent point, so stay tuned. Okay. Vitanya. Kate said, I'm a Rav Yossi, Nidam Zika, Rishon, Abba, Allah, Chamosu, Vanasa, Eshesish, Nidam, Chamosu. Eshesish, Vanasa, Chamosu, Nidam, Hashem, Eshesish. And the Gemara just articulates that whichever one comes first. So, Amar Rebbe Abahu. The kasha is that Rebbe Yossi previously said, Isser Chal al Isser. And over here, he seems to say, Ein Isser Chal al Isser. Now, let's imagine over here, he subscribes to that first viewpoint of Isser Chal al Isser. So now what should be? So he violated both Isser. In terms of, now Ben's right, you can't kill him twice over, but right, shouldn't the question of which came first be totally not applicable to our question? Meaning maybe give him the chamura, maybe even give him the more kal. But who cares which one comes first? Both Yisroel are there.
Wait one second.
Yeah.
Is kal, like you said before.
Right. But that shouldn't determine, if he holds Isser Chal Isser, which one came first shouldn't determine which death penalty he's going to receive. Meaning, right now, Lamaisa, there are two Isurim that he just violated. So you want to tell me the clause, you should get the more Chamer. You want to tell me the clause, you should get the more Kal. But if both Isurim are there, why should the first one that gets introduced be the determinant of which capital crime he's going to receive? Amar Rabbi Abahu, top of Lamed Beis, Lamed Beis. Moda Rav Yossi b'Isser Mosif. So now we get treated to the basic variables in Isser Chal al Isser. Rav Yossi will agree that when it comes to Isser Mosif, that yes, then Isser Chal al Isser. Okay, so let's go. What's this?
Why do we come with that rabbi? The concept that we get two things, you go with the more severe one.
Right, okay, good. So again, if Isser Chal al Isser, that's basically what the Gemara is bothered by. Meaning, give him the harsher of the two. Give him the... In other words, but don't look at which one came first. That shouldn't be applicable, according to Rabbi Yossi. So now, answer number one, says the Gemara, is that Rabbi Yossi says that, sorry, generally speaking, Ein Isser Chal al Isser, according to Rabbi Yossi. Right? New understanding of Rabbi Yossi. No, you look at the first one that comes first. But if the second one, however, adds a dimension of what we're now going to refer to as Hosafa, Isser Mosif, so then the second one is going to be Chal on the first. So the Gemara says, wait a second, we're going back to now the case of the two brothers and the two sisters. And we're saying that in that case, Rabbi Yossi says, because the second Isser is an Isser Mosif, so then the second Isser is going to be Chal on the first. Why is that the case of Isser Mosif? The Gemara would like to know. So the Gemara says, I can understand if Shimon marries his wife first, which makes the other woman his sister-in-law, but because it's his wife's sister. She now is usher to him, but only to him. What about to the other brothers? She's mutter, obviously. Now, Reuven marries that woman. What does Reuven's marriage to that woman introduce? A new Isser to Shimon, but also a new Isser to all the other brothers as well. So this is what's called Mosif. When Mosif now includes other people, when other people are including the Isser, Migu, since the Isser is included to other people, the Isser will be included to you as well. Migu di tosif isser l'gabi achim, tosif isser l'gabi didei. Good. That's the idea behind Isser Mosif. But the Gemara says, yeah, but that only works in the direction we just went. Let's go now in the other direction. So the Gemara says, and now, but let's go in the other direction. First, Reuven married his wife. Okay, to Shimon now, what is she? She's Eshazach. She's already usher to all the other brothers. And now Shimon marries the sister. Okay, I understand now it's a new Isser. But it didn't include more people. More people were not included in this Isser. So this is not an Isser Mosif. So why would Rabbi Yossi say that regardless of who married whom first, the second Isser is going to be Chal? If you want to make the argument based on Isser Mosif, but that only works if Shimon marries his wife first and then Reuben marries his wife first. But if Reuben marries his wife first and then Shimon, that's not Isser Mosif. So the Gemara says, well, maybe you can make the argument that vis-a-vis Shimon, you know what the marriage to his wife does? It creates not more, it doesn't generate Isserim for more of his brothers, but more women are also to him. That's not Isser Mosif, that's Isser Kolo. Hi Issa Kol Alhu. That it's true. It does include more Isurim to him, but that's only more Isurim to him. That doesn't make more Isurim to any of the other brothers. So and Rav Yossi doesn't use that as a platform of including the second Isur on top of the first Isur. Amar Rav Malani Alav Ki Ilo Asa Shtayim Beinu Chayv Al Achas. V'chein Ki Asa Rav and Amar Rav Yochanan Malani Alav Ki Ilo Asa Beis Beinu Chayv Al Achas. So the Gemara says, you know what? You're right. Rav Yossi really holds Ein Isur Chalal Isur, much like Rabbi Shimon does. So then, and that makes perfect sense in the case of the mother-in-law. And that's why in the case of the mother-in-law, you look at which Isur came first. Was she first your mother-in-law or was she first married? And that's going to determine which capital crime he's going to receive. As far as the two brothers marrying the two sisters, it's true Rabbi Yossi says you get two, but he doesn't mean two. You know what he means? It says ki'ilu, it's as if you violated two Isurim. Now, what does that mean? It's as if you did two Isurim. We're speaking legally over here. Or, you know, what you did is really bad. You know, it's as if you did two Isurim. Okay, but in other words, that's not how the system. That's not how the legal system works. So the Gemara says, I'm sorry, my nafkamina. The Gemara is bothered by that very question. So the Gemara says, you know what the nafkamina is? In terms of where it's to be buried. It's an interesting Rashi, please take a look at it. Just to say it outside really quickly, Rashi writes that basically the cemeteries in the good old days, it's usually how we refer to it, the cemeteries in the good old days, so they had different sections. Section of those who behaved and those who didn't behave. And even in the section of those who didn't behave, so they were even further subdivided. And to those who really didn't behave and those who just didn't behave. So for those who violated Isurei, Sreifa, and Skila, so they have one cemetery plot. And for those who violated only Herik and Chenek, they had a different cemetery plot. And what Rashi says is that maybe what the Gemara means over here is, even though technically we're not going to count the second Isur against him in a legal system, but in terms of status, in terms of where he's going to get buried, it's Ki'ilu, it's as if he did both Isur. Okay, and Tosos has issues with Rashi, you can see Tosos. But anyway, let's just quickly wrap it up. Okay, big Gemara that we did today, and discussion continues tomorrow. Again, we finished the discussion today of Zman B'Kiddushin. The Gemara had a discussion in terms of why dates are not required in Erusin contracts. Two answers offered by the Gemara. No time to review all that. Then the discussion in the Mishnah of what happens when a woman comes with a double Zika. Okay, as we pointed out, that's not a Din D'Oraisa, that's really a Din D'Rabbanan. A woman cannot have two Zikas. And finally, our discussion, which engenders a very basic discussion, two brothers married to two sisters, and Shimon now to Reuven's widow, is both Achos Ishto and Eshesach, and the discussion of Ein Isur Chalal Isur. Rabbi Shimon clearly holds Ein Isur Chalal Isur, and Rabbi Yossi, now we're in the world of debatable. Right now, the position we seem to be taking is that according to Rabbi Yossi, also Ein Isur Chalal Isur, unless it's an Isur Mosif, and what does he do with the case of the two brothers and the two sisters, where it's not always an Isur Mosif? Ki'ilu. The Gemara's answer right now is it's as if he violated two Isurim, but really he only violated one Isurim.